It's Thursday, June 16th, 2016, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, a podcast about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 149. Go away, Goliath. Runtime for this episode is 55 minutes.
Hello, and welcome to Last Time on Video Games. I'm some sort of Homo sapien. I'm Dallin.
You're a Homo sapiens? I think I might be against that. My name is Zach.
And I'm Cro-Magnum, Kevin.
Say it better.
You're
than
Cro-Magnum?
Yep. It's better than Homo Neanderthalus. I found out the other day.
Do you mean Cro-Magnon?
No.
Oh, so Cro-Magnum.
You're Cro-Magnum.
You're bigger. You pack a bigger load.
No, I'm like Magnum P.I., but I'm a crow.
Oh, okay.
I was like, isn't Cro-Magnum like a Transformer character?
I don't think so.
I don't know. It feels like a comic book character. I would believe that exists.
The Cro-Magnon. Yeah, the Cro-Magnum.
It's actually just like a really big revolver that fires little crows.
So, oh, that would be amazing.
I've got a murder of crows with your name on it.
That's my favorite name for a group of animals. It's a murder of crows. That sounds terrifying.
I mean, really, it's a whatever you want of things. There's actually a Wikipedia list of silly names for groups of animals.
But the actual official title for a bunch of crows is a murder.
Yeah.
Well, define
guys,
official.
Check it out. There's a murder over here.
Well, I think it might
That's
also...
That's not a good thing!
I think it also might be a murder of ravens. I think that they use that for a lot of those dark birds.
They're essentially the same animal. I mean, let's face it.
Crows are just stupider.
That is true. You don't see Odin wandering around with two crows. That would just be lame.
So, what
Blue Jays.
So, a crow, a raven becomes a crow when the crow or when the raven is stupid. It's a raven when it's intelligent.
Yes.
Or when you give it enough happiness and it levels up at night.
Just like it's a mouse if it's inside, but a rat if it's outside.
No, it's a rat if it's over 4 feet in length.
No, it's only a rat if it's outside.
I was gonna say, that's a ratigator.
Because a 4 foot rat is just known as a New York.
Those are R-O-U-S.
That's a New Yorker.
Although, what are you going to do if you don't have like a fire swamp to get rid of those for you? Like,
draw your sword and not have it be an epee?
Well. Yeah, that's actually a good point. If he's like a pirate captain, why doesn't he have like a scimitar or
a cutlass?
A cutlass, yeah. And then abrasive pistols?
Yeah, something
yeah, that's,
useful
that was
for
the typical
parties.
Thing. Yeah, because you need to chop things when you're a pirate.
That's why the cutlass, because it's a big broad, it's a broad blade and it's heavy. You can use it to cut lines and stuff.
Yep.
Unless your crew is just so amazingly effective that you can just sit back and watch and just like challenge the enemy captain to a duel.
But
well, even then,
you'd
want a cutlass over an epee because like epee fighting isn't really conducive to fighting on a ship deck.
Yeah, really, the only reason they exist is because it was useful for poking holes in chainmail. So
this is last time on historical weaponry.
Yeah, well, I'm a fencer. I know that my weapon of choice is useless. So
well, actually,
I don't use a lot
there's
of those
another
weapons.
Fencing epee that's more like a rapier, so it's a bit thicker blade. It's really only good for stabbing. It's not too great for cutting, but you can actually do damage as opposed to that fencing foil, which is like a tiny needle.
You know what's better off though? A broadsword or a battle axe?
Or katana. Those are
I have my rapier. Thunk! You have cut my rapier in half with your battle axe.
Actually, most of the people that would wield rapiers would be able to easily beat somebody with a battle axe.
Depends.
Because they go up for the swing and you stab them in the armpit because you don't have to move your sword all that far.
And they're usually longer than an axe.
Yeah, those fencing rapiers are actually long.
I know, I'm just being facetious.
So we
now
went
an epee, that would just be worthless.
Yeah, no one wants those. Also, they're French. I guess rapiers are also technically French, but... Okay, since we've managed to derail ourselves, I actually had like a segue
we
and everything.
We are amazing!
Kevin, since we started with you last week, I want to know what Zach's been playing first this time.
All right. He's been playing a lot of League of Legends. Big shock.
Is it so ERF?
No, it's only a weekend thing.
Okay, gotcha.
This week was definitely not Dominion.
What is Dominion? I don't remember this as a game mode.
Good question.
It was a King of the Hill game mode with 5 control points. If you controlled more control points than your opponent, their base started losing health. And the more points you controlled over them, the faster they lost health, and whoever base died first lost.
Think Battlefield 1942.
I never played it.
I played it when it first came out because you could finish a game in about half the time of a Summoner's Rift game. So it was a great way for leveling up because bots didn't exist when I was leveling up.
When they removed Dominion from the normal queue, it was populated entirely by bots and then like five people.
Yeah. So different kind of bots. They had people basically auto-leveling in Dominion because it was super easy to program.
And then they would just sell the account when it got to level 30.
Gotcha.
Which would then get banned.
Yeah, well,
you'd then suck, so you just lost out on all the experience you needed to, not suck.
Well, I always thought it was weird that it was like, oh yeah, there's League of Legends scripts and League of Legends bots. I'm like, are you serious that the people pay money for these things?
Some people are not willing to actually get the skills to get that free skin at the end of the season, so they're willing to pay to get the free skin at the end of the season. That's why boosting is a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of the scripting things were like super expensive, and I was like, it's really easy to tell when somebody's scripting. Like, this guy flashed the Tibbers ult in an impossible manner. It's not like he guessed when she was going to cast it. He literally flashed to just outside the zone of the AoE. Like, not a full flash. He flashed, like, halfway.
There was somebody who was... I was reading someone's, like, description of some guy who was scripting. Because they went to back. The guy threw a skill shot at him, and the person dodged. And then stood there and was like, why didn't I back?
Yeah.
But been playing a bunch of that. I beat Birthright, finally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man. I beat Birthright. Started Conquest, and Conquest does not seem to have the, like, not the side missions per se, but, like, there were challenge missions that were, like, just random guys would pop up, a little bit like an Awakening that you didn't play either. So Conquest is a little bit closer to, like, Reckon O'Ken that we played for the podcast, so you can't grind your characters or anything like that.
So it's there one are level, optional one level, one missions level. In Reckon O'Ken.
Yes, but I mean, like... Once you selected those, it wasn't like you could sit around and then go grind against something else because the mission might have been a little bit on the difficult side. And like I said, the Nora troops, I've already got 3 cavalrymen, 3 wyvern riders. I have heavy units with defense. One of the interesting things that I thought was because, you know, the Hoshidans get the in Birthright, the Pegasus Knights have the ability to be promoted to the Falcon Knights, which have spears and staves. The Norn Wyvern Riders can be upgraded to Magic Knights, which have axes and tomes.
That sounds way more useful.
And honestly, your main character, when they promote in Birthright, goes to the Hoshiden Noble, I think is actually what it's called, and they get swords and staffs. In Nor, in the Conquest one, you get tomes. So you get offensive ability when you promote. And from what I can tell, I think there are 4 characters that overlap. Mozu, who I'm not using this time, is like your Donnie character for those who understand. It's like your villager, terrible early, has some potential in him, whatnot. Silas, who I'm starting to think is the best character in the game. You get him on both sides, he's your only cavalryman for the Hoshiden side because he's a Noran trooper, but he's apparently your main character's old friend, so he's loyal to you.
Okay.
And so follows you. Azurk, that's the main character. But Kaze, a ninja, you get in Conquest. And there's another guy who is like another ninja type character who you can get in both, which is kind of interesting. I'm not actually really using Kaze, Mozu, or this other guy because I had him in the other one, so I kind of want to use other characters. I think my favorite character so far, though, the one that I have is Charlotte, I think her name is. She has an ability that gives her bonus damage if her opponent is female.
Okay, like... But is there a plot reason for that? I assume there must be.
I think she's supposed to be a bandit who is following you because they want to make friends with nobility so they can get a step up in the world.
That's ambition.
Most of the Noran characters, a lot of them are more on the asshole side of things. Well, more, I guess not asshole side, but more brutal side of, like, you have a cavalryman who is insane. Like, she's sociopathic, bloodletting insane. She asks when the stabbing fun begins. But like for all of the characters that are on that side of nutcases, you have the characters that are just normal.
Which makes them seem kind of odd by comparison.
A little bit. Like it's like a 1-to-1-ish ratio. So it's not that big of a deal. But it gives them a little bit more interest in that case. Although I thought the Hoshiden characters were just fine as well. Unfortunately, because of the more linear nature, I don't feel as though I'm going to have as much time to spend with these characters, unless I do a lot of
padding out the story or something.
Going to, like, the DLC, like the Dragon's Gate bonus missions, and getting their support ranks up with each other, so I can actually see some of them. So it's still fun. I enjoy the game. I enjoyed it before, too. Like, I just finally got around to finishing it, because I had some time off this week. Played a bunch of Overwatch, since that just came out.
Oh, yeah. How's that been? Ed told me he got up to, like, level 25 already, so
I'm at like 14, but I'm not playing it that much, and May frustrated me to the point where I am just like, I'm not playing this game PvP until that's fixed. Until the defensive characters stop being I'm just gonna go play bots because I have more fun doing that.
So well, have you seen the Penny Arcade? That's a Reinhardt and Bastion payload movers service.
Yeah, that's a pretty nuts combination. When I was playing Overwatch, I ran into, if I was trying to play by myself, I would be on the team of six people trying to complete six different objectives, apparently. And the enemy team would be all six people apparently talking to one another.
And coordinating their efforts.
Coordinating their efforts and just utterly destroying us. And it's like, okay, I'm Reinhardt. Here's my shield. Where did everyone go?
Get behind me.
Why are you running away from me?
That's the thing that infuriates me most. If I'm playing Reinhardt and I'm standing there, I'm like, all right, I've got the Bastion is shooting at me. So someone just has to, where are my team? Somebody deal damage. And then as soon as I drop the shield and go for cover, my teammates get butchered by him because why weren't you tanking it? Can I switch teams specifically to kill you? But still a good game. It's just, May is just really frustrating to deal with. I hate dealing with that character.
Well, yeah, that is true. Ice walls can apparently do some really silly things.
It's not even ice wall. It's the
freeze and her own stasis thing where she becomes invulnerable. Especially when she runs onto the capture point, goes invulnerable, and still counts as capturing the damn point.
So I'm like, I'm going to play the game and have fun. I don't have to be going against people to do that.
I'm also waiting for the kind of Overwatch craze to die down a bit, where there's less people that apparently have never played a team-based shooter before, and more people that understand, okay, I'm the support, I'm Mercy, I can't go flying in against the enemy team where there's four of them standing on this capture point. I should wait 2 seconds for the rest of my team to show up,
which is
so that we can
attack
en masse.
Regardless of who you're playing, you should wait for your team.
Yeah, don't go in one by one.
There was one match that Zach and I played where we won simply because two of us were working together. The rest of our team was off doing who knows what.
Yeah, if we can get a decent group of us, like four of us, playing like on comms, I'd be much more willing to play. But when it's me with a bunch of randos in any game, I can't stand it. I always seem to get paired up with the people that don't have basic game concepts down, like don't go in one-on-one against all six of them. Wait for all six of us, then we attack as one. Hey, wait for the, you know, Reinhardt ultimate to knock everybody down and then have Hanzo shoot them all. And oh, look, four of them died. Cool, now we can go take them out.
My policy is never fight fair when I don't absolutely have to.
Yeah, that's how you win.
So, like, that's how I play League of Legends. That's how I play that game.
Well, like, I learned from playing Splatoon a lot how you are so good at shooters. It's really, you're just an opportunistic asshole. You wait for someone to walk by you and you shoot them in the back. That's how you win. It's a good strategy.
Yeah, I mean, we all, like, you guys always made such a big deal about it. It's really just, I know how to play you. I know how to play people. It's, don't fight them. Ambush them. Don't give them a chance.
Yep, Reaper teleporting around behind and then blazing in with shotguns into their back line while the rest of you coordinate an assault to get their attention focused forward.
I think especially in Overwatch, people want to be the big damn hero.
They want to get the play of the game.
Yeah, well, they want to be MVP. The problem is the way you get to be MVP in that game and, you know, people who know what they're talking about, or I guess who know what's up, know this, is you're a team player. You help your team win. You don't win yourself.
I've played games where it's like, I'm the MVP, but the game doesn't tell anybody that. I don't get play of the game or anything like that because the payload's moving. Why? Because the Reinhardt's standing in front of everybody else as they're shooting their way to victory.
Yeah.
I'm not doing any damage. I'm not doing anything but standing here with this big freaking shield in the way.
When you look at the Reinhardt stat, that's like, he blocked 20,000 damage this game. Yeah, that's the dude who won the game for you guys.
And then, of course, the person who gets all the upvotes of, this guy did really, really well, is the guy that got 10 kills.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's the Bastion that gets 10 kills. It's
the Bastion that was standing behind the Reinhardt shield and killed all six of them because they kind of ran at him in a line.
Yeah, the play of the game is the Bastion in turret form behind the big Reinhardt shield.
I mean, to be fair, I only played in the beta. My experience is that most people were like, oh yeah, no, this person healed like 15,000 damage. They were MVP. Like, it almost never went
That's
to...
That's because most of the people that played in the beta were better understanding of the game because they signed up for the beta. They
That's
play
true.
Games more. A lot of the people playing now, I feel like, are people that were like, I heard this Overwatch game is good. I should go play it. You don't even know how to play video games, like, at a basic level.
I wonder if there are people who, like, only play Blizzard games.
They'd probably be sorely disappointed because... StarCraft 2 did not go nearly as well, but it's still a fantastic game. Overwatch is good. World of Warcraft is dying. I kind of want to see a Warcraft 4 where it's a top-down strategy game and see what they do with it. Because the heroes in Warcraft 3 are actually a really interesting idea.
Are there any plans for Warcraft 4?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Because World of Warcraft...
If this movie does really well, maybe there will be.
I kind of feel like StarCraft took over for their top-down RTS.
People liked the science fiction more than the fantasy setting, which I kind of understand. There's a lot of fantasy games. There's not as many science fiction ones, I feel like.
Yeah.
The one I want to see is Ghost. I want them to
make it's just
that
never
damn
gonna
game.
Happen.
I don't care that it's never gonna happen. Make the game. I have decreed it, Blizzard. Make me the damn game.
Well, as soon as you can fund it, they'll make it for you.
I'll get on that. We played an RPG called, what was it? Bancho Tenro Zero Polio.
The name of the game is Tenro Bancho Zero.
It's Disco. Japanese. So it ended in zero and it was Japanese. Had a really hard time. Actually, do I have my character sheet?
I think you left it at my house.
Oh, it's a tabletop?
Yeah, we played a tabletop game because we were on Memorial Day. We were missing one of our guys. And because I had to go to Aspen, I had not thought about our game. So we played this game that Jeremy had found. We fought the final boss. Cody got killed. I nearly got killed because
I was barely injured.
Kevin was barely injured because he wouldn't participate in the fight.
So my character was a robot that was housing the soul of a dead person to power it.
I was playing Cloud Strife.
I was playing Genji. I had two different swords. I threw shuriken. I could deflect bullets. Not back at other people, but I could deflect bullets with my sword. And my name was Genji. But I was a dead person housed inside the body of a robot. And it turned out the final boss used to be the general of the army that I fought in, that I extremely respected. So, of course...
So why would you fight him?
Right? I was super conflicted. Part of it was I didn't know how the setting dealt with the rogue... Like, do they program the robots at all, or was it, like, you know, just the soul following orders? I had been ordered to protect the village, who this general was attacking, but at the same time, this was a guy that I extremely respected. So I spent most of the time kind of going, like, I don't know what to do.
As I spent half the combat yelling at him to do something and trying to convince the other guy to stand out. The reason why I brought it up is because if Jeremy actually lets you know what it is, it's not Polio Disco Zero Bancho.
I think it's like Tenshin Bushido Zero.
That's Tenro Bancho Zero.
I have absolutely no idea. There's a couple of zero. There's zeros in the end, and I think there's an O or two in there somewhere. But it's got a really cool setting. The gameplay worked out real well, real fluid.
If you've ever seen Afro Samurai, that's basically the setting. It's like awesome. Feudal Japan, but with like cybernetics and lasers.
There were mech riders, like Gundams and stuff in there. My guy that I played was someone who used to be one of those, but lost access to his ride and then became hunting those down.
Yeah,
and
the mechs kind of like the innocence of children, which is why the children are mech pilots. And when they start to lose their innocence, the mech rejects them.
That's awesome.
But it was interesting. None of our characters had to be NPC'd out by overcoming or by overdoing their karma too badly. I came really close with like 155 and managed to get down underneath the 108 modifier.
So is this game intended to be a one-shot, or is that just how they were running
it? It's built as it works really well for one-shots. We had a little bit of a discussion on that. It seems to be built for shorter games, three sessions. Not really long-term campaign-style gameplay.
Yeah, your character is actually designed to progress very quickly over even a single session.
I just wanted
Jeremy to... was explaining it's something to do with in Japan when you do RPGs, you kind of get a group of like 30 people together that then break up into other groups to play different games. So it's like 30 people show up, 5 of them are GMs, you break everyone else up into groups to play those games. So there tend to be more one shot, maybe a couple of sessions oriented of very short campaigns versus these long sweeping, we've been playing this game for years.
Okay.
I just wanted to bring it up because it was an interesting system, it was an interesting setting, and if anybody's interested in it, I'm sure Jeremy can tell you what it is, and he'll tell Tyler what it actually is so he can put it in the show notes.
Again, one more time, Tenra Bancho Zero. Only $14.99 on DriveThruRPG.
The Strange is another cool one, but we haven't actually gotten to play that one.
The Strange?
It's called The Strange. It's an RPG.
That sounds like a disease.
It's The Strange. It's based in the Cypher system, because it's the second RPG that this company has released.
Cypher? I've never heard of this system.
The GM doesn't roll dice.
Well, hell, I never actually roll dice when I'm GMing.
No, the GM sets difficulties for different tasks. It's D20 based. And each, you can set a difficulty between like 1 and 10, and each difficulty is like 3 points on the dice, and you need to roll above. So like a difficulty 3, you need to roll above a 9, and there are certain things you can do to modify, like as a character, to make it easier, like if you're skilled in whatever the task is, or you can also spend points from your different pools to lower it a little bit.
I don't want to go too far into down the rabbit hole there, because this isn't the time or place for that. It's kind of an interesting system, but other than that, what have you been playing, Tyler?
What had I been playing? Okay, I mentioned this a while ago, and I've actually beaten the game since mentioning it.
Fire Emblem?
No! Retro City Rampage? I'm not sure what I think about that game. It's really well reviewed, and I think it's mostly undeserved.
How so?
So it's a game that's like, what if GTA was on the NES? And it kind of takes like the original Grand Theft Auto. I assume the original Grand Theft Auto had humor like this, where it's like, look at all these silly things going on, but it's mostly just like video game references, and there aren't actually jokes. It's like, look, I'm referencing The Legend of Zelda. That's funny, right? And it's not actually a joke, it's just there.
It kind of sounds like how they did the humor, quote-unquote, in the new Duke Nukem game.
I know almost nothing about it other than that people hated it, so.
Well, 14 years, that game never should have been released.
Nah, GameFAQs actually had a poll recently, like, when do you think Half-Life 3 is going to be released? And the vast majority of people are like, it doesn't matter, they should just not release it now. So...
I remember reading a review on, at this point, it would probably be irresponsible to release Half-Life 3 because so many people, they're building it up so much in their minds that if they were to release it, they would basically end up losing money because a bunch of Valve supporters who play stuff like Dota and TF2 would move away from it going, you guys f*** Half-Life 3, how could you do that to us?
Yeah, so there's no possible way it could be good at this point?
And Valve is making so much money, it's like, I mean, why? We don't need to. It's not, if our other games were stagnating, yeah, maybe we need to release Half-Life 3. But at this point, we can't make it better than your minds have made it.
Yep.
Although I did love, I think it's Yahtzee's review.
The first review?
The first review of the Duke Nukem game is, so he was making fun of the fact that it hadn't come out yet. So he's like, it was great where he's like, there's a cooking simulator. They just kind of like mashed all these things together and somehow it became amazing.
Yeah, it did.
And then the actual game came out and he was like, man, do I look stupid.
Well, and then he has to defend himself for like the first minute where he's like, my joke was not that it would never be released, but it should never be released. And that was a very key point. And it's actually right, because he was illustrating every point in his joke review of it, of this game should never come out because
it can't live up to expectations.
Yeah, it's been too long. You know, if it takes a couple of years and it hasn't come out yet, all right, well, people haven't built it up that much. But when it's like, 14 years of people clamoring for this game, I'm sorry, we're not releasing it. We literally cannot make a game that would appease you guys.
I think that's actually kind of what happened with Metroid, is that they released Metroid Prime, and it had been so long since they released a Metroid game that fans of the series were just like, this is not what I was expecting, and lost a bunch of people that way.
Yeah, although I had fun with Prime.
Yeah, I thought it was a great game.
Risk you always run in a long-running franchise. If you have a good chunk of space there in between releases, people almost by default be required to hate it.
Yeah, well, they'll either forget about it and just not play when the new one comes out, or...
be expecting something other than what you put out.
Very small exceptions, like StarCraft II, long period of time between it and StarCraft. StarCraft II is still fantastic.
Yeah, they did pretty well with that one. I think they got on the improved the formula.
I think Blizzard is actually kind of the exception that proves the rule, though, because Warcraft III was the same way.
The newest Diablo, though, kind of tanked.
Not for the
reasons why you'd think.
I had a lot of fun playing the new Diablo. Like, I just kind of got bored of it very quickly.
I have things against the new Diablo, but I do not want to get into them now.
And the when they made their DLC new game update, that actually fixed a lot of the problems. Because a lot of the problems were...
Auction house, as I understood it.
Yeah, it was the auction house, and when you got near the end game, there wasn't really anything to do. And so, I forget the name of the DLC, but they released the DLC and they gave you endgame content where you can, like, there's like this basically dungeon crawl aspect of, all right, so I have my high level character, I enter this dungeon, I have a certain time to beat it, beat the level, okay. And then if you beat the level, you get moved up in difficulty, and so it's like, how far can I make it through this dungeon crawl that's theoretically endless, where just enemies just get progressively harder by, they do more damage, they have more health. I had at one point, I was critting for billions of damage, and the enemies had hundreds of trillions of hit points. Like, it was starting to get ridiculous.
That's actually kind of cool,
though. I crit for 2 billion damage. I have to shoot this thing 20 more times in order to kill it.
Well, since you haven't been playing that, other than Retro City Rampage, what have you been playing?
So I wasn't quite done with that.
All right, so what's up?
I was going to say the other part, in addition to the non-jokes, who would take some time to go, like, this is the state of the game development industry. No one would ever be this much of an asshole, right? Apparently, the developer was, like, really embittered about the fact that they got turned down from a major publishing house or something like that. And, like, he would take 5 minutes in an otherwise fairly fast-paced game to sit there and, like, go on a rant.
Keep your personal problems and your personal opinions out of my game time, especially when it's something like that.
I don't mind using it as a platform, but it, like, broke the flow of the game so much. It's really the problem. And, like,
yeah, if you put it into a commentary, like Mark of the Ninja, you could play through with little commentary things on the levels, but you could also just skip those. So if you put it as a commentary, that's fine. But when it's just, like, base in the game, it's like, okay, I don't want to listen to you right now.
Shut up. I want to play your game.
Or, like, if it's a natural, like, speaking point for one of the characters, like, he can write it in well. He just didn't. I don't think it deserves nearly the acclaim it got. It was pretty meh overall.
I'm finding a lot of those lately have been those. This is not nearly as good as people seem to think it is, but it's getting well reviews and all this praise because it's something a little different.
Yeah, I mean, often they're okay games, but...
Well, and some of our experience is colored by the fact that people have learned from those games, added those elements to new games, and done stuff better, especially for a lot of this older content. It was like, oh, this was extremely well-reviewed. Well, I didn't really have that much fun, because I've played a couple of games that have used this concept better, or improved upon it, or used this concept and some other things. So it kind of colors my perspective to the older game first.
This is a slightly different such and such. Like, Fez was that for me. Like, I went and played that, and, like, this isn't really anything that new or interesting, but it was praised for being really new and interesting at the time it came out. But really, it's like, this is a platformer with a gimmick. I don't really see it. Undertale, on the other hand, is the extreme opposite of that, where it only makes sense if you have played a lot of games in the genre.
Yeah.
So, and that's, like, the critic's game. There are definitely ways to go both ways on that. What other game had I been playing? It was definitely something. Actually, it was definitely nothing. I played some more Metal Gear Solid, but only like 5 minutes. I started a new job this week and have been getting home late, which has left me not a whole lot of time to do stuff.
Is that going to change anytime soon, you think?
Maybe in the next couple weeks as I learn the cadence of the new job and stuff. I actually made my first commit today and broke the build, so... Although it was not actually me breaking the build, someone checked something in that has been intermittently breaking it all day, and mine was the first, like, officially approved check-in, so it's the first one that notified everyone. But sometime in the next couple weeks, I'm sure I'll figure out how stuff works around there. For now, it's been a combination of incredibly tedious and, or I guess incredibly stressful, but that's how new jobs tend to go, so... That's not video games at all. Kevin, what have you been playing?
So, recently, Ori and the Blind Forest released their definitive edition. I think it was like maybe a month ago, which is basically a $5 DLC if you own the original game. Otherwise, it's $20 and you get the original game and the DLC. It added two new levels, expanded the levels a little bit, and added two new powers. So one of them is a dash mechanic where you can kind of dash a short distance, and you can do it in the air after you unlock it.
Kind of like Mega Man X2 and beyond.
Kind of. And it allows you to make some of the jumps a little bit easier because you can jump, dash, double jump, and then triple jump if you have that unlocked. As well as you can get a light grenade power, which you use some of your energy to literally make a light grenade that you can throw at enemies. But most of the time you use it for lighting these lanterns, so it's a bit more of the puzzle solving.
Do they implement new puzzle challenges in this game to account for the new powers?
Yes, they did. So they have the two new levels, which you use those powers to get through them. And then you use the powers in other places. The dash is just kind of useful all around. You can quickly traverse across the ground with it, because as long as you're touching the ground, you instantly recharge it. So you don't need to run places. You can just kind of dash as long as you don't run into things. And then the light grenade is used to unlock some secrets most of the time.
So if you go back and do older levels that have that mechanic.
Yep. So this time I found myself, I collected all of the secrets in the game. They used to have these big save points. They now added the ability that you can warp between the big save points. So normally in Ori and the Blind Forest, you can create a save point anywhere you are as long as you have energy.
Okay.
And then there were these big checkpoints that would fully refill your health and energy and save the game. And there's one in each zone. Now you can warp between them. So it really allows you to, I now have this power so I can go unlock this secret. So rather than taking 20 minutes to run all the way across the map to go get it.
So is it kind of like a Metroidvania? Because I had gotten the impression that it was like linear levels. So
no, it's one big sprawling map and there are secrets hidden all throughout it. And you need certain powers to unlock them. So you do have to go back. It wasn't super annoying because the game is really pretty. But it's way nicer now that it's like, I can just warp myself over here and not have to spend 20 minutes running through this thing, dodging these enemies, then working my way over these pitfalls and finally getting to the secret.
Certainly sounds like a Metroidvania.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely is.
So that was actually already on my list for just being a pretty platformer. I really feel like games need to do a better job advertising that they're Metroidvanias because that's definitely a selling point for me.
Yeah, but the problem is, how do you advertise it's Metroidvania without slapping Metroidvania on the front of it?
Show a mini-map. That would do it most of the time. Because, up until the point where you're saying that you have to traverse back to places, I'm thinking, this sounds a lot like They Bleed Pixels, which is not a Metroidvania at all. It's, a series of linear levels. So.
Yeah, no, this is a Metroidvania. There's one map. It's really fun. The story is amazing. Overall, fun time. So this is my second time through now with the Definitive Edition. I've also been playing Shadowrun Hong Kong. That's the third of the Shadowrun games that they've released for the PC, which added a couple new mechanics and is fun. It's Shadowrun.
So how do the Shadowrun games work? Because I played
Have you Genesis played XCOM? Game?
No, but I know how XCOM works.
Okay,
well,
so.
Somehow he hasn't played XCOM despite owning three copies of it.
It's only two.
It's a tactical game that functions pretty closely to the RPG, where you build your characters the same way, and then you get action points, so it's so here's you have a kind of zone that you can move. This costs one action point, costs two.
Think Fire Emblem.
Okay.
Because XCOM plays fairly similarly. You just have an action point. You can move and attack, but they each cost an action. Moving is an action, attacking is an action, double moving is both actions.
But I know and how you can actually unlock additional action points later. So the first one, Dead Man's Switch, is the name of the campaign. And it ran into some problems of you were kind of limited in your character choice, because the game ends if your character is ever knocked unconscious. So you're usually a party of people.
So in this third installment, did they change the AI so they no longer only ever target you?
Yeah, the AI are now intelligent and try and shoot easy targets, or it's not just shoot the main character, regardless of the fact that he's only got a 3% hit chance and there's this other guy right in front of him with a 99% hit chance.
But that means that he can effectively build a tank and they will actually be useful as a tank.
Yeah, well, you could do that anyway, but it was just kind of annoying if it was I want to play a shaman or a wizard who don't generally tend to build too many hit points.
Or a decker.
Yeah, or a decker.
Or a rigger.
Yeah, how do deckers work in a game like that? Because, their entire thing is, outside of combat in the original RPG, so.
So the decker can, shoot some pistols. They're not really particularly effective in combat. But then you can do stuff like, oh, because you have a Decker, you can hack into the security system. The Deckers get their own special combat in virtual reality where they run around with special Decker powers to go defeat programs and stuff like that. The Shadowrun game actually changes it up a little bit where there are kind of sensor programs flying around and you have to avoid their detection. And then there's this hacking minigame to get through walls and stuff like that. And so you can do that. You know, I used it very recently to unlock a back door into this place. So I could have blasted my way through a bunch of bad guys, but this person, they work for the person who hired me. They're just kind of split in their faction. Okay. So she's like, they technically work for me. I'd rather not have them killed, but if it comes to it, it comes to it. So I was like, oh, well, I can use this Decker to open this back door and get in that way so that I don't have to kill anybody. Or you can murder everybody and just get yelled at. Really fun game. And then I've been playing a bit of Slime Rancher.
Oh, yeah. So I like Slime Rancher.
Yep, I saw you playing Slime Rancher and was like, you know what? This looks like a super relaxing way to waste time. And it is.
You can kill time surprisingly quickly with that game.
Yeah, when I first started playing, it was like, oh, it's 2 hours later. Wow.
I think part of that is the music, because it's just always so calm. It yeah, the music, like time is passing.
The music is so calm. The gameplay isn't particularly difficult.
So, speaking of fantasy settings, you know what happens in fantasy settings? Gargoyles. This week we played Gargoyles Quest, I think technically the second game in the Ghosts and Goblins series before they really knew what they
were doing.
Well,
that's what we were supposed to. Kevin, yeah, what did you play?
See, I played Gargoyles from the TV show where I was playing as Goliath and fighting Vikings and robots.
That honestly sounds like a pretty cool game.
That sounds like a better game than this.
It honestly was a pretty cool game. It was actually pretty well animated. So
if it was on the Genesis, that kind of goes without saying.
A lot of Disney tie-in games were surprisingly good.
Yeah, this one wasn't really trying to follow the story of the TV show too hard. I mean, it was a little bit. It was like Goliath is fighting against the Vikings who have created the Eye of Odin. And he's trying to stop it because...
Reasons.
Well, for like the second level, they've like attacked the rookery. So they're like killing a bunch of gargoyles. So
that's not cool, dude.
Yeah, that's not cool. We're the gargoyles. So the reason why they explain that Goliath makes it into the future is he's cursed because their castle fell. And he's cursed to be stone until the castle rises above the clouds.
That's actually the plot of the show.
Besides these little like snippets, they didn't actually try to follow the plot of the show too much. Like, you never run into any of the other gargoyles or anything like that. That's not true. You run into the evil one. I'm forgetting
Demona.
Yeah, you run into Demona, but that's it.
That is unfortunately not the game we played or were supposed to play.
I don't know that it's super unfortunate.
We played some terrible Ghosts and Goblins sequel.
Kind of. It's not really at all like Ghosts and Goblins, I think, to its benefit. You play Firebrand, a gargoyle who is apparently the best gargoyle around. No one's ever going to keep him down.
Basically the Red Devil.
Yep.
From Ghosts and Goblins.
Except you're a particularly effective Red Devil.
You can actually move in not a pendulum manner.
Yep. So it's a pretty standard platformer, except you kind of go up and down. You can cling to walls like you're some sort of gargoyle ninja. Or I guess, you know, a gargoyle.
Which was interesting.
Depicted.
You can kind of fly, you can cling to walls, you can breathe fire.
And the game eventually uses it to make some tricky platforming moments where you had to, like, quickly react to cling to a wall or you run into an enemy. Which is a big deal because you only have two hits, like it's some sort of Mario game or something. It's crazy hard straight out of the gate.
I didn't even beat the first level. I couldn't get past the instance of you have to get around this thing of fire that's right at the top of a ledge, and I couldn't figure out how to...
So,
I didn't try very hard, to be entirely honest.
You can shoot fireballs. They're a generic kind of Mega Man-style projectile. You can only have so many on screen. You get power-ups as the game goes on to increase the number of fireballs you can have on screen.
They don't go particularly far, either.
No, they don't.
No, I forgot that was even the case, but you almost immediately get a power-up that makes them go across the entire screen, and you can have two of them on screen at once.
Okay, because I very briefly played the first level, because when I met with these guys, I realized, oh, I had played the wrong game.
You can also hover. You can increase your hover power over the course of the game. You also increase your health over the course of the game. The way you do this is by going on a fetch quest to save the kingdom from other demons. I was actually really hoping you were like fighting against Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins.
That would be kind of funny.
Like, it would be a nice inversion of the story from the original one. But no, you work for the guy who Arthur kills.
You have to go kidnap his girlfriend?
Yeah, that would be awesome. No, some other demons are invading and they're less nice than you. most of the inhabitants of the kingdom you live in are zombies, basically, and they're like, we're zombies, we're useless, we need your help. So you go around and get on fetch quests, you get vials, which are basically just money, and you can buy extra lives with them. You gain power-ups kind of like you beat a boss, and the game's like, well, you beat a boss, I guess you need a power-up now, and it just like gives you a power-up for no particularly good reason. There's some.
Well, to be fair, that's how Mega Man does its power-ups.
Yeah, well, yeah, except you actually get the boss's power. In this, you just get a power that has nothing to do with the boss. Like, it just happens. One of them is you become inspired by your own awesomeness, so you shoot better fireballs.
I do that all the time. I'm constantly being inspired by my own awesomeness.
Does it cause you to shoot better fireballs, though?
Depends on whether or not I've had Taco Bell that day.
Yeah, I was going to say. It really depends on how you define a fireball. There are some pretty neat things you can talk or look at, I guess, or you can interact in three different ways with anything on the world map. They're talking, looking at, or checking. I'm not really sure how they differentiate between like searching and checking.
Interesting, because I didn't get out of the first part, so I didn't even get to a world map.
There are places you can search to find items you actually need to progress the game. I kind of accidentally searched a spot and found the thing and went to the next village and like, I think there's a thing in that spot you search. I'm like, aha, I already found that. I don't have to backtrack. Like any RPG, apparently, made in this time range, there are random encounters.
Ugh.
Except instead of like a normal random encounter, you're in a platforming level all of a sudden, and you have to defeat all the enemies or exit off screen. Kind of Zelda 2 style, actually.
I've been struck by a random platforming section.
Yeah.
Oh my god, the world has fallen away.
It works a lot like Zelda 2 in that you have to either defeat all the enemies or cross to the other side of the map and you can exit to the random encounter. They're kind of threatening at first because they're of random difficulty depending on where on the map you are. Kind of learned where the safe spots to walk are over a while, but eventually they become trivial and they're just kind of annoying like most RPG random encounters. Also, all the plot important characters are directed to do something they use the exact same sprite for. So it's a little confusing. You're like, didn't I see you in like that hut back there?
Aren't you like, how did you get here before me? And why did you need me to come here if you're already here?
Because your princess is in another castle.
But like one of the guys is like, go get my goblin stick. Here, I'll give you a fingernail. I'm like, what's the fingernail for? And
I don't think I want your goblin stick.
Or your fingernail.
Well, they like you get random things, like the plot's not super coherent. It's slightly more coherent than the original Final Fantasy in terms of why they want you to go do things. But
I'll take your word on that because I didn't play that one.
Like, I feel like there are a lot of Guy Danit moments that I accidentally lucked into not being confused by. But I feel like if I had done something slightly differently,
here's the
been
metric
really...
for Guy Danit: better or worse than Phantasy Star?
Definitely better. There isn't go grind. In fact, grinding does nothing for you. I easily had way more money than I knew what to do with. It maxes out at 99. Actually, Kid Icarus kind of has this problem where it like, starts out at a difficulty cliff and then gets easier as you go on.
That's a mistake in game design.
Yeah, and I think we have learned that since making these games, which actually came out in a similar time frame. But generally, you want difficulty and player ability to scale roughly proportionally. But that's why Metroidvanias are fun, is because as you gain more power, you can go back and say, man, I remember when I had a hard time going through this area. Now I can just breeze through it. And this game has kind of the opposite problem where, like, you just breeze through the entire end game and it gets boring after a while.
That's the main problem, is if you start off really, really hard, people are even average skill beat their heads against it for too long that they stop caring, and people are good enough to get through that aren't able to appreciate the challenge at the end of the game because you don't have one.
Well, like, you couldn't get past the first level, and to be honest, I game overed 5 times on the first level, and I'm pretty good at platformers. This is not really a good way to start a game.
Because it's not fun.
Yeah, and this harkens back to, I think, the original Ghosts and Goblins design philosophy of, if it's really hard, they'll feel like they got their money's worth out of it. And that's, I guess, an okay strategy, but it doesn't hold up very well in the...
Well, even those games that are focusing on making it very hard, it's very hard later. If it's very hard right at the gate, it's like, well, why do I even want to spend my time trying to beat this?
Yeah, like, I think Super C is actually an excellent example of how early games made games super hard for, like, replay value, but also are good games, because it doesn't start immediately balls of the floor death traps. And
it's easier to say, I'm not going to bother with this, when you put the game out there so difficult to start, Whereas if you've already gotten started and put some time in, it's harder for a player to say, I'm done with this because of the sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah,
I've so much time in this, I want to see the end.
Yep.
I haven't done anything, so who cares? This game's just not worth my time.
Exactly. Well, and there's, like, especially with games that get harder as they go on, there's some mastery of this, like, can I get through the entire first level without dying? Like, that's kind of fun. As opposed to, can I get through the first level at all? That's not as fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's just silly.
That said, I mean, I kind of like it in the same way I like Zelda 2, in that it is an RPG.
Incorrectly?
Yes, incorrectly. No, it's an action RPG before we really knew how those were supposed to work. I mean, honestly, Metroid came out before either of those games and was arguably better than either of those games and was doing the same thing they were already trying to do, so I'm not really sure I should give them that much credit. It's an interesting piece of gaming history. I actually thought it was a different game when I first chose it, called Demon's Crest, which I think is actually the sequel to this. It's actually a really good game. This game is not that game, so...
So apparently there was a lot of confusion as to what game we were playing.
I was the only one who wasn't confused about the game we were playing.
Well, I played the right game. It just was not the game I thought I chose. So, do you have anything to say about it other than...
It's crap!
Yeah. I mean, it's a bad design decision. It's better than some of the games on our list. Speaking of which, we have a list. It's at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com, where we try to qualitatively chronicle all the games we've played in some sort of ranked order. At the bottom of the list, we have Golden Axe. I think this game is better than Golden Axe. So, at the top of the list, we have Chrono Trigger.
I think this game is worse than Chrono Trigger.
I think this game is probably worse than Chrono Trigger, so...
Yeah, I can agree with that. It falls somewhere in that range.
Between Chrono Trigger and Golden Axe? Yeah, somewhere in there?
Somewhere in there.
Approximately the middle of the list right now, we have Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
This
HD.
Is worse than that.
Yeah, I think it's also worse than that.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
Jump down to Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that's probably a good comparison point because this is technically a sequel to Ghosts and Goblins. I don't really think it's at all similar to Ghosts and Goblins.
I think Ghosts and Goblins is better than this, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I liked all the things that he could do as Firebrand. He can cling to walls. He can shoot projectiles.
I couldn't get past the first level.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel like...
I got past the first level in Ghosts and Goblins.
And I don't know how, because I feel like that's harder than the first level in this. So.
It's not, though.
I mean, it's possible that I just don't remember that game very well. I spent a lot of time on it, was really frustrated, beat it, and said, okay, I'm never playing that game again. So, I think...
But I didn't play it very much, so I don't know. Like, the first level is just too damned hard, and I
would argue for this game over Ghosts and Goblins, if only because they did a lot more. There are platforming levels, and also you can power yourself up. And make the game easier.
I guess based on the ambition scale of things, especially since this was a Game Boy game, was it not?
Yeah, especially compared to the NES game that the other one was.
Okay, fine.
It had an overworld map. That was all the rage at the time.
Fine. We'll put it above Ghosts and Goblins, but not too high, mind you.
No, I'm not thinking it's going to go a whole lot higher. Hey, here's a game we never talk about, Rhystar.
What?
Yeah, okay, maybe that's why we never talk about it.
That was that failed Sega mascot thing.
Yeah, where you could, like, stretch your arms out and interact with things that way.
Is it better than that game? Yeah, because Rhystar, whatever the hell it was, had just the, like, I press A and my arms stretch.
I mean, it was pretty, and they did things with that.
Pretty is meaningless. Comic Zone is pretty.
Yeah, I was going to say, this also puts it above Comic Zone, so...
No, I'd agree with that.
Well, that's already higher than I thought it was going to be. I thought this was going to be on the last of our four pages of things, so... although I don't think it's going to go much higher than that, because pretty quickly we have, like, Gunstar Heroes, and I can't possibly put this above Gunstar Heroes.
What's right above Rhystar?
Scat, actually.
This is not that good.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's
do
better
you,
than
well,
Scat,
do you think it's better than Rhystar? Because we didn't really discuss that.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You kind of said it was, and I just kind of didn't comment on it. I think it's better than Rhystar, only because Rhystar seems really uninspired to me compared to...
This one at least has has that idea of, let's try this. It's way too freaking hard to be worth it, I think.
Honestly,
but at least it has that idea of, let's try something different, especially with the Ghosts and Goblins...
The franchise, which is not really a thing yet.
So, I mean, they're like, let's try this.
And I think Zelda 2 kind of did the same thing, and I think they kind of flopped in similar directions. I think you might have liked this game slightly better if you managed to get past the first level, because it actually gets easier after the first level.
So, perhaps.
Which is a little unfortunate. But yeah, right above Rhysar we have Scat, and I don't think
it's not better than Scat.
Okay, so right above that is Scat. Scat is a pretty okay eight-directional shooter. You get to fly in all the directions, though, which is, kind of makes it different than a lot of those.
You have Arnold and Sigourney are your two characters in Scat.
Yeah, but honestly, it's a more engaging game overall. There's more going on the screen. Like, they're both kind of bullet hells in that there's a lot of stuff that will kill you quickly. And I think
Scat's got that additional level of polish on it.
Yeah.
That just puts it... I mean, they polished that turd. They polished that Scat, whereas they didn't really do that for Gargoyle's Quest, it doesn't feel like. It feels a little choppy. I mean, being on the Game Boy hurts it a little bit in that respect, but having that wall of entry of you must be this good to play our game
which is
not fun.
We definitely like difficulty curves and not difficulty precipices that you have to jump off in order to start the game. I kind of wanted to compare it to Zelda 2, not really because I think it's at all a competitor to Zelda 2, but because they are similar concepts, but I don't really know that I have anything to say about that other than they're similar concepts and Zelda 2 did it better. Or I think
Crapcom, remember?
That is true. They were really living off of their whole Mega Man thing at the time. I guess they also eventually made Street Fighter, so, you know, they did
Resident something. They eventually made Resident Evil.
Yeah, that was also, well, okay, maybe not the first. They eventually made Resident Evil 4, I think is the better statement.
And then they started fighting Marvel.
They did that before.
Before that, they fought the X-Men, and that was pretty cool.
Actually, they made Darkstalkers, too, I think.
Hmm. Yep, Darkstalkers is also a pretty good game.
And then that was a fighting game that just kind of died off. So Morrigan, Felicia...
Yeah, which is a little sad.
Now just part of Marvel vs. Capcom. They never show up anywhere else.
Like, I like Darkstalkers better than I like Street Fighter because the characters are a lot...
More interesting?
Yeah, and then it just died because Street Fighter came first, so...
Well, and I don't tend to judge things by the duds. Like, you know, if an actor makes a bad movie or a company makes a bad game, I really like judging them on...
Yeah, the individual games.
The
honestly.
Individual games, or have they made good stuff in the past? So yes, everyone can make mistakes, but these guys can succeed. They actually have made good games before.
Well, the thing about Crapcom is that they have been consistently terrible.
Yeah, they've...
Except we've listed some actually pretty good stuff, so...
I know. Dead Rising 1 and 2 are pretty good.
Oh man, I forgot they made Dead Rising.
Resident Evil 4 is pretty good.
Honestly, I feel like... They have about a 1-3 hit-to-miss ratio, so...
I'm at least willing to look at a game that they made, as opposed to just going, oh, it's coming from Capcom? No, I'm not
at the state of, Crapcom made a game, I'm not going to touch it. I'm going to take a look at it and see if it's something I like, especially if it borders something I already like the Dead Rising kind of loony nature to something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take a look at a Street Fighter game, because I don't really care. But
yeah, but that's like a genre preference.
That's a genre thing. It has nothing to do with Capcom itself. I don't care for 2D fighters.
So I don't even really care about the publisher other than, like, I pay attention to franchises I kind of care about, which are usually by the same publisher. I mean, thanks Bethesda for now making Fallout, I guess.
I've been making fun of them by calling them Crapcom on this episode, but I don't actually feel that strongly about them.
But speaking of them, I think we've decided that Gargoyle's Quest, the somewhat odd and kind of mediocre sequel to Ghosts and Goblins, sits at 120 out of 158, I want to say now.
It's not quite the never touch these games ever side of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's only sitting 3 below Gunstar Heroes, and
I think the bottom 25 are the never bother with these games, because we played them for you and they're terrible bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, Streets of Rage is actually the very top of the bottom 25. Yeah, I'm trying to decide where the cutoff is. Altered Beast is only, like, 2 above that, so...
Yeah, but Altered Beast is meme-worthy.
But we've got, like, Comic Zone is in there. That's within the bottom 25,
no,
so...
we played that one for you. You don't have to.
Yep, that is true. All right, so I think that's it for ranking. This was a pretty short discussion, but we kind of knew where it was going to go. You know what words are great to spell with Ks? Like clan.
Cuff.
Combat.
You're not suggesting what I think you're suggesting.
Yeah, I'm suggesting we play Donkey Kong Combat, the critically acclaimed... No, I'm not. You know, we didn't give it a fair shake because it was a terrible game, and actually we gave it a plenty fair shake, but maybe its sequel's better. I propose Mortal Kombat 2.
I don't think this is quite where they get to every character has 900 different ways to murder you after they've beaten you. I think they get to that in 3, but...
Yeah, Air Max isn't even a character yet, so... Ermac. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
But it
was I right about the Aramacros thing? What?
Yeah.
Did you watch the
Did you know?
Did. All right, so I guess Mortal Kombat 2, more fatalities?
Next time on The Last Time, palette swaps.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2016. All the video games and other media mentioned within are copyright their respective owners. Past episodes and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us by email at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. We're also on iTunes and would really appreciate it if you left us a 5-star review. Podcast over. You have to go to the start screen and load your last save again.